This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and I guess it's probably something I could say that I'm very good at. I've been waiting for this for a long time. We're going to cut taxes for the middle class, make the tax code simpler and more fair for everyday Americans, and we are going to bring back the jobs and wealth that have left our country, and most people thought left our country for good.
Well, that's President Donald Trump addressing a group of business leaders in Indiana earlier today. I'm Russ Jones, and I am filling in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council, and I'm the producer of this show and a 30-year media veteran. It's an honor to produce the show, and it's an extra honor to guest host and sit in for Tony. Well, we've got another packed show lined up today. Republican leaders have announced a new tax reform plan that promises tax relief. Can it get passed? Representative Buddy Carter of Georgia will be here to discuss the tenets of the bill and what it means for you and for me. Is free speech on the decline on college campuses? Attorney General Jeff Sessions thinks so, so much that he addressed the problem during a speech he gave yesterday at Georgetown University. We'll have someone here from Campus Reform. He'll be here to dive into that discussion. Nikita Vladimov. And after all these years, would you believe people are confused about how they feel about abortion? That's what researcher George Barna has discovered in a new study. He'll be here with those details, and of course, we'll take your calls. But before we talk about tax reform, I want to remind you about the upcoming Values Voter Summit on October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the Family Research Council. This is the annual go-to event for those with conservative biblical values. You will hear from leading newsmakers and lawmakers in the nation. It will help you speak persuasively, which is important, to your community and legislators to spread support for your values. For more information, go to valuesvotersummit.org. That's valuesvotersummit.org. It's an amazing event. I've been there several times, and you will hear from major newsmakers, lawmakers. You will be impacted. You will be equipped. And I don't know about you, but we're living in a time where you really have to know the issues and defend the issues and do them well, defend them well. Hey, if you want to listen to the Washington Watch radio program while you're working out or whatnot, go to frc.org. You can download the programs there. There's an archive there of all the programs. Put it on your iPhone or your mobile device and work out whenever you go on a walk. I do that for sure. And hey, we've got some exciting news. Washington Watch can now be heard in Liberia. Can you believe that? We want to welcome EFPC, Free Presbyterian Radio, 92.5 FM, is now broadcasting the program in Monrovia, Liberia, West Africa. The Free Presbyterian Mission Church of Liberia, the mission work of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America, commenced broadcasting from their newly constructed radio station on their mission property outside of Monrovia, Liberia, in April of 2017. The station is currently running a 1,000-watt transmitter with a four-bay antenna, which throws twice the amount of signal as a one-bay antenna. It's amazing. So we're very excited to welcome EFPC Radio in Liberia. Welcome to Washington Watch. We're glad to have you on board. Well, as we've discussed and as we played at the top of the show, President Trump talking to folks in Indiana about tax reform. The GOP tax plan aims to boost growth and create jobs. It's set to be, it's being touted as a historic tax reform measure. And let's listen here to what Representative Paul Ryan had to say. He had to say this about the bill earlier today.
I can't tell you how excited this is, because this is not just a big moment for Congress, it's a big moment for Americans. Too many people are struggling in America today. They pay too much in taxes. They feel stuck. They feel anxious. They're living paycheck to paycheck. and we need faster economic growth, and we need a tax code that's built for growth that helps struggling families. People need relief, and we know this. That's why this framework is going to be focused on helping American families. It's going to be focused on helping the people in the middle. It's going to be focused on helping people get to the middle who are struggling to do that.
And are you struggling? I know a lot of folks are. And, you know, there's been a lot of disappointment of late about not getting health care reform, getting Obamacare repealed. And this is one of those big ticket items for President Trump on his policy agenda. He ran on this. He came to the plate with this. So a lot of folks are putting a lot of stock in this, are hoping that this will make it to the floor and pass, and they're out there pushing this. And for most Americans, tax proposal from the White House will result in a dramatic decrease in taxes and a dramatic increase in simplicity. Well, with us now is Congressman Buddy Carter. He represents the 1st Congressional District in Georgia. Congressman Carter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I appreciate you being here. Well, everybody's out talking about it today. This is the first major tax reform measure proposed since Ronald Reagan. What are your thoughts, and what have you seen so far?
Well, what I've seen that I have not seen in the 2.5 years that I've been up here is electricity in the air. And I'm telling you, people are excited in our conference. I don't think I've seen as dynamic a conference meeting as we had this morning. People are excited. Members of Congress, members of our majority conference are very excited about what's being proposed. This could be a legacy for many of us of what we are trying to do here.
Well, take us inside of that conference meeting. What was discussed? Give us an inside glimpse.
Well, first of all, let me preface it by saying that I think that we learned some important lessons through the health care debate. And you know, it's important that you learn your lessons, and we're certainly not beyond learning lessons, and I think we did. We learned that we need to have a framework, that we need to have the input from members, and that's what was presented today, a framework that had been worked out between the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And now they present it to us. We still got to fill in some of the blanks. There's no question about that. But the basic framework was there, and now it's up to us to fill in those blanks and to get the final product going.
And that's so true, fill in the blanks. A lot of folks don't realize that writing legislation, passing law, it's messy, isn't it? It's messy work. It takes, you know, getting into the trenches. But, Congressman, this is one of the things that I think we're hearing first. Instead of 7 income brackets, there would be 3. Is that right?
That is correct. We're talking essentially 4, because there'll be a 0 tax bracket. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there'll be a 12%, a 25%, and a 35%. You know, our whole goal is we want to be very thoroughish. We want to be simplify. That's one of the things that we're trying to do. We're trying to focus on delivering a tax break to the middle-income families. And I think this plan, the framework for it, does just that. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know how the Democrats are going to be able to vote against this, because if you look at what it does for middle income families, this is going to be significant.
And of course, there'll be some who try. Critics are already out there saying there's too many loopholes. This is just nothing but a big celebration for the top of the income earners. And we're hearing that already, right?
Oh, yeah, and that's to be expected. But, you know, we can refute that, and we can refute that quickly, because, again, the brackets, if you look at those, the tax brackets, 12, 25, 35, you look at the standard deductions. We increased almost double the standard deductions, $12,000 for single people, $24,000 for those for married tax payers. And then we increased the child tax credit, and do away with a lot of the itemized deductions, but keeping the deductions for home mortgage insurance and for charitable contributions, which are very, very important. And then on top of all that, something that's very important to me and to my district is repealing the estate tax, the death tax, which has just devastated our farmers in South Georgia.
Yeah, that framework places a 25% cap on S-corps and would reduce the corporate tax rate from, what, 35 to 20%? And these deductions would put us in line with the industrialized world and help make us more competitive. Isn't that the whole goal?
It is the goal, and you bring up a great point. Taking us from 35 to 20 takes us from having one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world to being below the average, which is about 22.5%. So we go down below average to 20%, which is going to make us competitive. And, you know, when that happens, you get more jobs, people get excited. This is just such an exciting time for me and I think for all of us in Congress.
And there's also a new credit of $500, which would be created for non-child dependents, such as an elderly relative. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that are taking care of a parent or, you know, another elderly relative.
No question about it. As you know, in my former life, I was a pharmacist, and specifically a consultant pharmacist in long-term care. And I saw it all the time, and I've seen it in my practice of pharmacy of children becoming caregivers and having to take care of elderly patients and elderly parents and loved ones. And this will be just a great benefit to them.
And how are you doing? I know there's folks out there, if you go into the average coffee shop, there's some discouragement out there. I think a lot of people were hoping to see something happen with health care. And quite honestly, the House, you all did your job. You did your part. And what's the mood there on Capitol Hill about health care, and how does that impact this tax reform bill?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think that we learned some important lessons from health care on how to approach a big subject like this, and I think we're doing it right this time. Admittedly, we did a poor job in the way that we approached health care. But, at the same time, we've been, we're excited. And perhaps one of the biggest we're excited is because of the failure of health care. And I know personally my experience when I go back home, I explained to my constituents, look, we did our job in the House. We passed the health care bill. We took the hard votes. It was in the Senate that failed. Well, unfortunately, they're not buying that. All they seem to understand is that you Republicans told us we gave you control of the House and the Senate and the executive branch that y'all get things done, and you're not getting things done. So, that's why I was excited to hear that the framework for the tax reform has already been through the leadership in the Senate and the executive branch. So we're all three groups working together now.
And are you hearing anything from your constituents? This is important to them, I would imagine.
Oh, very, very important. And everything we've heard thus far has been, a lot of questions, as you would expect, but it's been very positive.
Well, Representative Buddy Carter of Georgia, thank you so much for joining us here on Washington Watch. This is an important issue, and blessings to you, and thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
Well, coming up next, in a speech yesterday at Georgetown University, Attorney General Jeff Sessions focused attention on the state of free speech on America's college and university campuses. When we return, we're going to talk about this. We're going to go to someone with campus reform, Nikita Vladimov. He's got all kinds of information, and I know this is important, especially to parents. We'll be back when we return.
We need you in Washington, D.C. That's right. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve the great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alveda King, Kevin Sorbo, Bill Robertson, and many more. This is the place to network and meet up with people and organizations that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues that will shape the future of our country. Join us at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's a pleasure to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon. So much going on. Now, yesterday at Georgetown University Law Center, Attorney General Jeff Sessions said that freedom of thought and speech are under attack on American campuses. He said that the Department of Justice would file a statement of interest in a lawsuit involving a Georgia public college's use of free speech zones and that the department would make more such filings in weeks to come. And now yesterday I pulled a clip. Let's take a listen to hear what AG Sessions said.
Freedom of thought and speech on American campus are under attack. The American university was once the center of academic freedom, a place of robust debate, a forum for the competition of ideas. But it is transforming into an echo chamber of political correctness and homogeneous thought, a shelter for fragile egos.
A shelter for fragile egos. Well, we don't deal with fragile egos here on Washington Watch, and we've got someone with us now that definitely doesn't, because he does this for a living. Joining us now is Nikita Vlitomirov. He's an investigative reporter for campusreform.org. Prior to joining Campus Reform, he wrote for The Hill, where he extensively covered the latest political developments in the U.S. and around the world. Nikita, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, fragile egos, how do you do it? You deal with this every day. I mean, this is definitely one of those big-ticket items we're facing about how our young people are being educated in that environment today.
Well, absolutely. You know, sometimes I come into work at the Leadership Institute's Campus Reform, and we deal with such outrageous stories, it's almost difficult to know whether or not we're reading a fake tip about some satire story or whether or not it is real. That is the point at which our higher education now finds itself. Of course, Attorney General Jeff Sessions delivered a rather riveting address yesterday. He said the Justice Department will support free speech on college campuses, and frankly, he focused his attention on many of the problems that we cover on a daily basis, issues such as safe spaces, free speech zones, administrative bias, and so on. So I thought it was a very strong performance, and I thought he delivered it very well.
Well, were you surprised to hear him speak out on that issue, coming as one of our top leaders of the country?
I was not surprised, but I was very, very pleased because we haven't, unfortunately, heard this in the past decade. We've had an administration, previous administration, that was very silent on this issue. And this is, unfortunately, the window where many of the universities around the country began to make this push to just completely eradicate any sign of contrarian thought, of contrarian opinion. You know, we used to, United States of America used to be the epitome of free thought and free expression.
Exactly.
I came to this country from Russia. I'm a Russian immigrant. And one of the reasons that I came here was this amazing, remarkable opportunity that the higher education in the United States has that attracts immigrants from all over the world. And unfortunately, our higher education is in deep trouble.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Several years ago, I was in Belarus as an investigative reporter and also a part of a contingent of international election observers. Yeah, which is an oxymoron. And I saw firsthand how free speech is shut down. I saw the so-called opposition candidates who were running against President Lukashenko be beaten and drug off not to be seen. And I traveled around that country for several days, and I saw exactly, and I wish others could see that, because that's feels like where we're headed here.
You know, absolutely. Sometimes when I went to college, I didn't graduate too long ago. It was about 2 years ago now. But when I went to college, I couldn't tell sometimes whether or not I was in Russia or whether or not I was in the United States of America. I had to pinch myself. The administrators really do in many schools, and this is not obviously the case in every school, but in many schools, private and public, administrators abuse their power. Which has a very negative effect on free thought, which students should be allowed to have.
Well, Nikita, a statement from the Justice Department said that the zones at Georgia, when it constitute, are you ready, 0.0015% of the campus, and that students must also obtain prior authorization for many activities, even in those zones. So it's not really like it's safe to speak much of anywhere on these campuses.
No, it's not. And the problem is a lot of millennials, a lot of people my age, also believe in this. They don't mind this at all. For example, we recently covered a study by the Brookings Institution, which found that about 1 in 5 undergraduate students, which converts to roughly 19%, approve of using violence to shut down controversial speakers. So 1 in 5 students actually think it is okay to use violence to shut down controversial speakers. So this is just the type of thing that we're dealing with. And of course, another 39% of students, for example, also indicated that hate speech is protected by the First Amendment, while 44% said that it is not protected by the document. So it's absolutely absurd. And unfortunately, millennials are also part of the problem.
Well, the Attorney General, he cited a 2017 survey supporting what you just said from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education that found 40% of responding colleges maintain that free these speech codes substantially infringing on constitutionally protected speech, and that he also picked out a handful of instances of restrictive speech codes at colleges and universities, as well as notable incidents involving campus speech conflicts, to depict this broad threat to free expression in higher education. But Nikita, what I'd really like to say is it feels like we've moved where it's not only about free speech, but it's the thought you might have in your brain, that your thought isn't even welcome.
Exactly. And what is more scary than that is the fact that it is acceptable to shut down free speech merely because you think that somebody's address or speech might be dangerous. And this is where we're getting to prior restraint, which is a huge problem when it comes to free speech limitation. And I also want to note, I was actually at the venue where the Attorney General was delivering his address. And I was covering the
protest. We're about out of time.
I was covering a protest that was happening outside, and some of these protesters were protesting freedom of speech while they were advocating for freedom of speech for themselves. So I thought that was rather hypocritical.
Well, Nikita Vlitomirov of Campus Reform, thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We'll look forward to having you on back again. Well, coming up next, a new study finds Americans are more confused than ever over the issue of abortion. We'll talk with noted researcher George Barna after the break.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And as we've been talking about, you got to put on your calendar the Values Voters Summit. It's a big deal. And a lot of folks are working hard to make it a great event for folks that are going to come. Top lawmakers, newsmakers, people that have important insights on issues that are important to you. The Values Voters Summit. Make sure you get that on your calendar. Go to the Values Voters Summit website, and you can find out everything you need to know. You can go register for hotel. You can register for various events and whatnot. So right now, we are going to talk about this issue of abortion, which we talk about all the time, but there's a new study, and we're trying to get George Barna on the phone. And it says that this new ruling by the Supreme Court on abortion, known as the Roe v. Wade, was handed down in 1973. Many of you know all about this. One might expect that Americans to have developed clear and consistent views on abortion during the intervening 45 years. But new research from the American Culture and Faith Institute suggests the opposite, the fact that more than 54 million abortions have been performed in the country since that ruling has done little to spur people on to develop a clear and compelling view on the matter. Do you find that to be true when you're talking with folks about this issue? Are they confused? Do they not understand a biblical worldview about abortion? Well, this is fascinating research, and we have come to trust George Barna and his work very much. He's conducted this survey and appearing at the Capitol to present the latest national research on abortion. George Barna, he's the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute. He told legislators and other activists gathered that the best summary of Americans' views on abortion may be confused and lukewarm. That's sad, isn't it? Confused and lukewarm. He went on to describe highlights from the ACFI study on abortion attitudes and policy prescriptions. And on balance, he says that a plurality of adults, 47%, claimed to be pro-choice. That was substantially larger than the 38% who claimed to be pro-life. And then another 8% said they held neither position, and the remaining 8% were not sure. The largest share of adults said, but instinctively minority, believes that abortion is immoral, 36%. And close to one-fourth of the public, 23%, says abortion is a moral act, while a similar proportion, 24%, says that abortion is not a moral issue. The remaining 16% do not know. You know, I just find that staggering that folks are unsure how they believe and what they believe about this issue. And it's important to know this. It's important to know that people are confused, but still, it's a unfortunate and sad commentary of where we are. And I know there's a lot of pro-life organizations out there that work tirelessly every day. And you hear Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch talk about this issue. And we see it talked about in regards to the healthcare issue and how important it is to defund Planned Parenthood. So why would people be confused? Why would people not know what the situation is and why their opinion matters? You know, it's just perplexing to me to know that that's such an issue with people who are polled. So, and millennials are much more likely to approve of abortions regardless of the age of the fetus. They view the decision as a woman's choice more than a matter in which the fetus has any rights. The younger group is less likely to view the fetus as a human upon conception, is much less prone to halting funding for Planned Parenthood, and is less likely to describe themselves as strongly pro-life. Well, with us now is George Barna. George, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, thank you so much for joining Washington Watch. We've got George Barna on the line with us right now, American Culture and Faith Institute. Tell us about this. I've tried to set you up. Tell us about your findings.
Yeah, essentially we asked about three dozen questions of a large nationwide sample of adults related to the topic of abortion. And what we essentially discovered is that people are confused about the issue. They're pretty lukewarm in most of their beliefs about it. You've got maybe a quarter of the population who are firmly pro-life. You got maybe a little bit more than that, not quite a third, who would say they're strongly pro-choice. But when you look at various dimensions of abortion and abortion policy and laws, you find out that there's a tremendous amount of inconsistency. We would estimate that at least 78% of the adult population in America has very inconsistent values on abortion, whether you're asking about the legalization of it, the morality of it, how it works in life, when a child becomes a human being, all those kinds of things. You put it all together and you find out that there's a lot of inherently contradictory views that people hold.
Well, George, would you hold on with us? We got to take a quick break since we got you on late. Would you hold on and come back with us after the break?
Happy to do it.
All right. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're talking with George Barna about a very important issue, the issue of abortion, and why people are confused about it. George is also going to be speaking at the upcoming Values Voters Summit. So don't go away. Stick with us, and we're going to take some calls. We're going to take your caller questions at 866-372-7234.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Well, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we're talking with researcher George Barna. A new study, 54 million abortions have been performed in the country since the ruling of Roe v. Wade in 1973. But folks are still confused after all these years about how they feel about abortion. Now, George, you're also going to be speaking at the upcoming Values Voters Summit, and is this going to be on your agenda to talk to the masses here?
Yeah, it relates to certainly one of the topics I'll be talking about, which has to do with the decline in the number of people who have a biblical worldview. And so this is right at the heart of that. You know, if you don't know what the Bible teaches, you don't know how to think biblically about the issues of the day, well, it's only natural that you won't have strong feelings one way or the other. You won't have clear beliefs one way or the other. And that's kind of the nature of our country today.
Well, George, do you mind fielding a question or two? We've got Robin in Iowa, and she's wondering about, are men just confused about their voices, values? Robin in Iowa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call and for the stand that you make on your show and for such Christians. My question is along those lines, and I've just had that thought that a lot of men may not feel like they have that voice. They're confused because of the women's rights movement and women stating that, well, you know, this is my body and you don't really have a say. And maybe they really silently believe that it's not right a lot, but they don't feel like they can say that. And so there's maybe a segment of our population that just feels like, dads aren't that important. They're made fun of in TV shows. And so what role is my role and do I really matter? And that kind of ties into the whole thing. Yeah, so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, George, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Robin, it's an interesting thing that you bring up. One of the kind of life principles that we find a lot of people buy into, and particularly men, when we talk about what is often thought of as a woman's issue, is the concept of pick your fights. And so a lot of men really don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about abortion, talking about abortion, doing much activity related to it. You know, the culture continually is pushing men to try to be more sensitive and, you know, to really focus on those areas where they have some kind of personal expertise. And so, yeah, I think there's something to what you're saying. But I think the overarching view that comes out of this whole survey, and it has been coming out of a whole series of surveys we've been doing recently about the need for cultural transformation, is that Americans are so busy doing so many other things that relate to their personal interests and desires and perceived needs, and they're so overwhelmed with information in this day and age that they don't spend much time stopping to think clearly about even the most important issues of our age. And so I think that plays a significant role in all of this as well.
And let's go to Ohio right now. Speaking of men, we've got Joe on the line, and he says that a lot of the problems in society with abortion are due to liberal education. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think a lot of it is the liberal education and in the high schools, and now guys should probably even down into the junior highs. But I went to a liberal Ohio college back in the 80s, and I didn't even realize I was being brainwashed, indoctrinated. We had an ethics teacher, and I can tell you that one of our papers and debates in the class was, should abortion be legal? That wrote a paper and said abortion should be legal. It should be treated, the unborn baby should be treated as a tumor, a cancer, should be removed. Everybody that wrote a paper supporting abortion got an A, and everybody that wrote a paper, you know, saying, you know, that it's wrong, it's immoral, they got a C or D for the class. And I was 19 at the time, you know, working two jobs, you know, participating in college athletics. And I was literally, you know, 4 or 5 years out of college before I realized, you know, that was a liberal indoctrination. That was a brainwashing. I was a 19-year-old kid, and I'm not putting it all off on the educators. I should have educated myself and done some of my own research. But I said, when you're working two jobs and trying to get through college and take the easiest path through college, there's a lot of brainwashing and indoctrination goes on at these liberal universities. And I, for one, didn't realize it until I was, you know, out of college and, you know, got out and, you know, started listening to Christian radio and got into my late 20s before I actually even realized what had happened to me at college. But I'd just like to hear his opinion on that liberal education that's going on across the U.S.
Yeah. And George, yeah, doesn't that make the average person, you know, the Christian and the pastor in the pulpit, even more effective and important in this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember that this is a battle. I mean, there is a battle being waged for the minds and hearts of Americans. This is one of the battlegrounds on which that's being fought. You know, the whole issue of abortion and life and so forth. It's interesting, in our survey, we actually asked adults what they thought public schools should be teaching to teenagers in relation to these matters. And what we found is that only 35%, I say only, I mean, to me it's still shockingly high, but only 35% of adults believe that public schools should be teaching teenagers that abortion is a viable alternative to an unwanted pregnancy. 49% said the school should not be teaching that. 16% didn't have an opinion. And by the way, we also found out in the same survey that 66% of adults said that the school should be teaching that adoption is a viable option to an unwanted pregnancy, and 77% said that sexual abstinence should be taught as a viable option. So, you know, we look at these things. I think the other thing to add to Joe's argument is that we find in our research that adults are largely unaware of what their kids are being taught. That's one point. And the second point is that, in a way, we're finding that most parents don't really care as long as their kids are excelling and are going to be able to get ahead in life. So we've got to get parents to pay greater attention to the moral development of their children, the values to which they're being exposed, and to really take leadership of that whole educational process rather than just pass it off to the public schools and that whole system and say, you do what you need to do, just make sure my child excels.
We're talking with researcher George Barna on Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And we're talking about the alarming number of people who are confused about the abortion issue. And one of the points you made in this study, George, is issue fatigue. Tell us about that.
Well, because this issue has been in the public spotlight for more than four decades, and because there's been so much heated conversation around it, we know that Americans like to avoid conflict whenever they can, especially if it's something that they think doesn't pertain to them personally. And so, for instance, we found in the survey that more than 6 out of 10 people said, well, you know, I wouldn't have an abortion. I wouldn't advise somebody to have an abortion, but it really ought to be a woman's personal choice. Well, that may not be the best way to look at this whole issue, but it relates back to the fact that people are saying, you know what, there's so many different facets to this issue. There's so much information, and there's strong arguments on both sides of the aisle. I really don't know what to believe, but I'm sure tired of hearing about it, tired of thinking about it. And even in elections, you know, I think back to all the research we did in the 2016 election. And what we found is that conservative Christians were really the only people who said abortion was a significant issue in that election, and that the positions of the candidates really were going to make a difference to how they chose to vote. The rest of America, they were looking at things like the economy, the environment, immigration, the military, and so forth.
Well, George, let's go to Illinois and talk to Michelle. Michelle, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. The one thing that I want to say, I've never heard this argument brought up before, and maybe it has as it relates to abortion. But, you know, women get two choices with abortion. They already had the choice to conceive that child. And now they think they get a second choice to abort that baby. And I just think that's even more disgusting because they already had one choice and they made that. They shouldn't get a second choice. And I'll just hang up now and just see if you have any comments about that. And thanks again for taking my call.
Yeah, Michelle, it's a really interesting point you bring up. And it relates in my mind back to something we found in the survey where it's a minority of Americans who believe that the fetus becomes a human being upon conception. Most people think there is some magical moment that takes place somewhere on the spectrum of 1 to 9 months while the baby is in the mother's womb, and that is when it magically becomes human. And so maybe part of the challenge that we have is helping people to understand that process of when the child actually becomes human. It happens at conception. So if we could convince them of that, persuade them of that, show them that, we'd probably gain some ground.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Let's go to Peggy. And George, this is Peggy's in my home state of Missouri. Peggy, you were raised by abortion activists, and now you're pro-life. How'd you get there?
I saw the pictures in June of 73. Instead of saying, isn't that a shame, I said, what can I do? And I've been in the battle since June of 73, and I've won a national award, but lost my whole family estate because my dad did not want any of his money to go in any Christian or pro-life group. So my sister and I both joined the battle on the other side, I mean the pro-life side. But I think we're hiding the babies. People have not seen the pictures. Get on the Internet, look up abortion photos or abortion pictures. You can't stay on the fence when you've seen the pictures, but I've actually seen the dead babies. And this nation is so overdue for the Christians to be judged. I can't believe, and it seems like my husband says, the people don't care about anything until it interferes with their TV reception. And I tell you, begin to wonder. We are murdering children.
Peggy, thank you for calling Washington Watch. George, that relates to something I was reading in your study. Did your study find any obstacles that might be in the way of people embracing a pro-life, from embracing a pro-life worldview? Is the church, can the church do something different? Can Christians do something different?
Well, we did, Russ. I mean, we found a whole bunch of things that stand in the way of people taking that pro-life stand. You know, the fact that more and more people are disengaging their Christian faith, their beliefs, from their morals and their behavior. The fact that Americans are becoming more and more narcissistic, where the things that matter most to us are not things like truth and service to God and other people, but elements like comfort and convenience and choice and happiness. The fact that most Americans do not believe there's any such thing as absolute moral truth. In other words, they make up their decisions on the spot based upon their feelings in those circumstances. We find that conservative churches are not really teaching biblical principles to the same degree that they have in the past. And we've even got a situation now where tens of millions of Christians around the country are virtually begging their pastors to teach them how to think biblically about today's issues. So you put all of that together, and you've got a recipe for Christians saying, yeah, I'm going to disengage from this issue. It's a hot potato. It's something I really don't understand. My church doesn't talk about it, so I'm just going to avoid it. And that's a losing strategy. But, you know, Peggy pointed out something that I didn't write about in the report that we put online, but it's very important, and that's that in the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a few research studies that have tested the impact of showing people video of what really happens in an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the only consistently effective approach that I've seen where you can take a pro-choice, a pro-abortion person, show them those videos, and then afterwards a large share of them say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it. That's mm-hmm. gruesome. That's awful. I can't support that. And so they do change their views. We live in a culture where we're educated by what we see. And so the more that we can show people the reality of what abortion is, the more likely people are to have a realistic perspective and to really support life.
Well, George, you mentioned pastors. Quickly, Jack in Oklahoma, you're a pastor. You had a few things to say. We've just got a quick minute. Go ahead.
I agree with Mr. Barta that worldview is very important. I would just add that if you don't have a biblical worldview, you start with that, you're never really going to be anything but confused, I think. And the worldview issue is one where what most people get their worldview by osmosing it from the people around them. So if you grow up in a world, there's a huge amount of pressure that I experience as a youth, and I see in my youth and in my family, people are going and accepting the worldview of the people around them, and then they're very confused. We have people that don't know what gender they are, so it shouldn't confuse us to think that if they want the convenience of having sex outside of marriage, then they have to have the convenience also of abortion. And it's a combination of our own human condition and the fact that the society around us is telling us, here's what you have to do.
All right, Jack, I hate to cut you off. We're about out of time. George, quick comment.
Pastor Jack raised a good point. We do tend to develop our worldview by default. And what we know is that a person's worldview is developed between 18 months of age and 13 years old. What you believe at 13 is pretty much what you're going to die believing. And it's largely influenced by media, government, and family. So we've got to get in the game.
George Barna, American Culture and Faith Institute, thank you so much. Lively discussion. Thank you for our callers. We didn't get to all of them. But friends, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. I'm Rush Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.